Hey guys, what's up, and welcome back to another episode of Homebrewed Evil. Today, we will be talking about the tragic murder of Pyeong Nae-dong. This episode discusses sensitive topics, including the abuse and death of a migrant domestic worker. Listener discretion is advised. The content is for informational and awareness purposes only, based on publicly available information and reports from reputable news channels. There are 245,000 migrant domestic workers employed in Singapore, most of whom are women aged between 23 and 50. They come from countries like Indonesia, Philippines, India, Myanmar, and Sri Lanka to work as helpers in households. Their monthly salaries typically range from 500 to 700 SGD, Singapore dollars, depending on their experience. So the more they work, the higher their salary gets over time. These women rely on their employers for shelter, food, and income as required by Singapore's Ministry of Manpower Regulations. So this case takes place in Singapore, if I haven't already mentioned. Many of these migrant domestic workers come from poor families, often burdened by debt. They leave their homes with one goal: to provide a better life for their families. Pyeong Nae-dong was one of them. I will from now on refer to Pyeong Nae-dong as Pyeong. So, it's May 2015. 22-year-old Pyeong leaves her toddler in Myanmar and makes her journey to Singapore to work, hoping to secure a brighter future for her son. However, she was just shy of the legal working age of 23. So in Singapore, the minimum age limit for a migrant domestic worker is 23. The employment agency altered her date of birth to reflect that, she is already 23. She was just shy of 2 months, actually, so they just brought her birthday 2 months forward. And this raises the question of if they had just waited 2 months, could her tragic fate have been avoided? Her employers, Gayathri Murugayan, and her husband, Kevin Chilvum, were supposed to give her that opportunity for a better life. Instead, Pyeong walked into a nightmare. She was hired to care for the couple's two young children. But within months, she became a target of relentless abuse. It is said that the couple lived in a three-bedroom flat with two tenants, and Gayathri's mom, Prema, would often come to stay over to watch the kids. 14 months later, on 26 July 2016, a doctor was called to Gayathri's house for Pyeong. The doctor arrived at the flat at around 11 a.m. and found Pyeong lying on the living room sofa with her mouth gaping open. Upon examination, the doctor discovered no pulse, and Pyeong's skin was cold to the touch. She noted that Pyeong's limbs appeared emaciated, resembling skin stretched over bone, with sunken eyes and hollow cheeks. The doctor attempted a pain reflex test, but there was no response, and Pyeong was pronounced dead. In response, Gayathri insisted it was impossible, claiming Pyeong had just been moving before the doctor's arrival. She asked if there was something the doctor could do to quote unquote fix the situation, leaving the doctor confused. The doctor observed numerous bruises and abrasions on Pyeong's body and requested that Gayathri call the police. However, Gayathri refused and called an ambulance instead. Unconvinced, the doctor made the call to the police herself. When questioned if Pyeong had recently eaten, Gayathri's mom, Prema, claimed the maid eats a lot. Later in the autopsy, it was revealed that there was no food in Pyeong's stomach. The autopsy also revealed 31 recent scars and 47 external injuries all over Pyeong's body. The mother and daughter, Gayathri and Prema, were arrested the next day and charged in court the day after with the murder of Pyeong. During the trial, a forensic pathologist described Hyang as severely emaciated, with no fat on her abdominal wall, something he called an outstanding finding. Her cheeks were hollow, her neck thin, and her collarbones stuck out prominently. He explained that even very thin people usually have some fat on their abdominal wall and around vital organs like kidneys and intestines. The body stores fat to use in emergencies when food is scarce. When someone is deprived of food, the body first uses up its fat reserves. Once the fat is gone, it starts breaking down muscle, and eventually even brain tissue can be affected. In Pyong's case, all her fat reserves had been used up, and her muscles were severely wasted. Her abdominal wall was filled with fluid instead of fat, likely due to organ failure. Her intestines were shrunken, her liver was pale and strained with bile, and her gallbladder was swollen with thick bile and mucus. He concluded that Pyong's condition was caused by either a diet with no fat or complete starvation, which would have inevitably led to organ failure or death if continued. Pyong was 145 cm tall and 38 kilograms in April 2015, just before she started working for the family. In her autopsy, her weight, including the body bag, was only 24. During the trial, Gayathri shared that her initial thoughts of Pyong was that she was a slow worker who ate too much. She perceived Pyong to have poor hygiene and was forced to wear multiple layers of face mask as part of a set of strict rules she had to follow. Now, I don't know about y'all, but during COVID, when we had to wear just that one mask, it was already, you know, it was already suffocating. So I can't imagine how Pyong must have felt with several of those face masks. 5 months into the employment, she got abusive and beat Pyong several times a day. A CCTV was installed to keep watch on Pyong and the kids. This CCTV would end up holding evidence of all of the abuse that Pyong endured. Footages were played in court of Gayathri dousing Pyong in cold water, slapping, pushing, punching, kicking, and even stomping on her while Pyong was on the ground. She would use objects like plastic bottles, metal ladles, and even a broom to hit her. Gayathri would target vital areas like Pyong's head, her neck, and her groin. Once, when Pyong accidentally burned Gayathri's clothes while ironing, Gayathri responded by pressing the heated iron onto Pyong's forearm. In the CCTV footage, Gayathri was heard saying, "If you like to burn people's things, how would you like it if I burned your hand?" Pyong was never given any privacy and had to shower and relieve herself while the bathroom doors were wide open with either Prema, Gayathri's mom, or Gayathri watching. Pyong's meal often consisted of only sliced bread soaked in water, cold food straight from the refrigerator, or just rice. Pyong would sleep on the floor with one arm tied to the window grill with a cord. The reason she was tied is because Pyong was caught twice sneaking out of her room, once to the kitchen to take food from the fridge and another once to eat the food in the dustbin. I think this, you know, this just shows just how hungry and desperate she was for food. The day before Pyong died, the night of, she was taking longer than usual to finish laundry. This angered Gayathri. She grabbed Pyong by the hair and shook her violently like a rag doll. Pyong began swaying on her feet due to how weak she was. In the CCTV footage, Gayathri can be heard telling her to stop, quote-unquote, dancing before striking her on the head with a detergent bottle. Later, Gayathri and her mom splashed cold water on Pyong and, as their routine, tied her to the window grill to sleep, and they even sent her to bed without dinner that night. On July 26, the day of Pyong's death, Gayathri tried to wake Pyong up but got no response. She was frustrated. She kicked, stomped, and choked Pyeong in an attempt to rouse her. She even poured a bottle of water over her, but Pyeong remained motionless. Prema and Gayathri tried to revive Pyeong, but were unsuccessful. 4 hours later, they called the doctor to come over to their home. They untied Pyeong from the window, changed her out of her wet clothes, and brought her out to the living room to lie on the sofa before the doctor got there. The cause of Pyeong's death was hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy. It is a type of brain damage following severe blunt trauma to the neck due to being tied to a window grill and starved for weeks. Learning about the violent nature of this case during the trial, the entire nation of Singapore was shocked. The Singapore's Minister of Home Affairs and Law even made a rare statement. He said, "People who seem ordinary are capable of extraordinary evil, and there are two pillars in any society to keep evil in check. One is education. Two, we need rule of law to keep such evil in check. The law has to come down with full force when the rules are broken." In 2021, Gayathri pleaded guilty to multiple charges of assaulting her domestic worker. Although she initially was charged with murder, the charge was reduced to culpable homicide due to her diagnosis of obsessive-compulsive personality disorder and postpartum depression following the birth of her second child. She claimed that her OCD tendencies were intensified after her pregnancy. Examples of her OCD were shared during the trial, including how she insists on her husband to pick her up from work almost every day to take her to a clean toilet somewhere else, and her habit of excessively washing her hands. She also requests her sister-in-law to wear a shower cap in her flat after noticing strands of her hair on the floor. She's also made her family members wear masks to prevent contamination from their nasal discharge. So due to all of these, she escaped the death sentence but will serve the longest jail term meted out to a domestic migrant worker abuse case in Singapore of 30 years. She has since made several attempts to appeal her sentence, citing alleged abuse by fellow inmates, presenting contradictory medical reports to emphasize the severity of her condition, and employing various other claims. However, the prosecutor refuted these allegations, and the court ultimately dismissed her appeal. Now, her mother, Prema, was handed a 14-year jail sentence, but has since increased to 17, another 3 years, for telling her son-in-law to hide footages of the CCTV from the police. Now, Kevin Chilvum, the husband, is still ongoing trial for his sentencing. He was in the police force as a staff sergeant and has since been suspended. There is also CCTV footage of him grabbing Pyeong by the hair, lifting her off the ground, all because he was irritated that Pyeong was falling asleep while eating. In court, when Gayathri was questioned about this, she claimed she was unsure. Later, she was asked if she wanted to view the CCTV footage to clarify the incident in question, as she said she had quote-unquote forgotten about it. She declined, stating that it had taken a lot for her to recover from the trauma, which is just unbelievable, because can you, like, after everything that she did to Pyeong, she has the audacity to say that it's a lot for her? Text messages were also uncovered from Kevin that was sent to his wife in March 2016. It read that, "She never put the children's photo in the hall properly again. I told her that if one more time she do the same, no food for her the whole day." Kevin is currently on trial for one charge of voluntarily causing hurt and another charge for abetment in causing grievous hurt to Pyeong through starvation. He also faces charges of giving false information to the police officer and of removing CCTV cameras from the home that recorded the abuse. Now, regarding the CCTV, on the day of Pyeong's death, Gayathri's sister came to get the kids, and it was later uncovered that Prema, Gayathri's mom, had worked with Kevin to sneak the CCTV recorder out in her bag, but eventually later it was all retrieved by the police. Now, in 2020, Kevin and Gayathri got a divorce. More text messages were uncovered from a group chat with the couple and their extended family, which is inclusive of Gayathri's sister and her husband. In one instance, Pyeong had snuck out of the flat through the window to go to a coffee shop to have a meal with another helper. Regarding this incident, Gayathri messaged the group chat saying, "She's worse than a hungry ghost. Eat, 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 eat. Instead of going out of my room, she should have jumped down the kitchen window. Once and for all, case closed." Her sister responded, "Exactly, should have just jumped down and die." She then added, "She is worse than a dog." 2 weeks before Pyeong's death, she called her sister back home, which she rarely ever did. And when she did, she never complained about her job. And in this time that she called her sister, she just said that she's feeling unwell and wanted to return home in August and asked if her brother could come pick her up from outside their home village. Her sister suspected something was amiss, but never in a million years did she ever think that this would be the last time that she'd be speaking with her sister. Her brother later traveled to Singapore to retrieve Pyeong's body. Many NGOs and welfare organizations in Singapore raised money to send to her family and her son. They raised over $200,000, but I think some is being kept by the embassy for when her son grows old and needs it for his education, and others were given to support his sister raising him. Her brother shared that they forgive the perpetrators and will let the law handle what needs to be handled. He also shared that he is very grateful for Singapore's support. Back in Myanmar, more than 200 people gathered to mourn Pyeong's death. Her relatives traveled over 800 kilometers to be there. Upon seeing her body, they wailed uncontrollably, overwhelmed with grief. Pyeong was described as a very quiet girl growing up. Her parents, who were farmers, passed away when she was just 4 years old. Before coming to Singapore, she worked in construction, but decided to move after hearing from her friends that the salary here was better. She dreamed of buying a plot of land to build a house for herself and her son. The father of her child had left her when she was pregnant, and she planned to work for just 2 to 3 years to save enough money. Pyeong's sister, who had been looking after Pyeong's son, expressed concerns about how she was going to raise the boy now. She worries about providing for him and giving him the life that Pyeong had hoped for. Since the incident, several measures have been introduced to better protect domestic workers, including random house visits by Singapore's Ministry of Manpower and a mandatory rest day once a month, which absolutely cannot be exchanged for additional salary. So now in Pyeong's case, she did not have any off days or a phone, as she traded those benefits in for additional salary. Other changes include more thorough checkups during the mandatory health visits for domestic workers. Now, employers aren't allowed to be present during these checkups, and BMIs are also to be recorded. So in Pyeong's case, during her mandatory visits in May, the doctor had observed bruises around her eyes and cheeks as well as swollen legs. When questioned, Gayathri claimed that Pyeong was clumsy and often fell. The doctor wanted to perform further tests, but Gayathri intervened and insisted they were unnecessary. An NGO runs a hotline for migrant workers, shared that, you know, they receive daily calls from domestic workers reporting issues like insufficient food, scolding, being denied the ability to request for a transfer of houses. So in Singapore, there is a requirement where current employers must approve a domestic worker's request to transfer. And obviously, this skews the balance of power in favor of the employers. And this creates fear among workers as they worry they might not be able to find another job, leaving their families back home stranded in debt. This entire live-in situation, live-in arrangement, it just poses risks as it is, because it makes domestic workers vulnerable to situations behind closed doors. NGOs have pointed out a pattern of domestic workers being treated as lesser beings, not deserving of the same treatment given to friends, families, or colleagues. They hope that by granting, you know, helpers in Singapore more rights, employers will shift this perception. There has been a rise in companies that employ foreign workers for part-time domestic services like cleaning and grocery shoppings, where the workers don't have to live at the homes that they serve. And this model is definitely seen as much safer because it provides working hours, proper working hours, and it reduces any risks associated with live-in situations where workers are vulnerable to abuse and exploitation. You know, and this whole like proper working hours allows them to have a better work-life balance, more autonomy, and not confined to one employer's home. It allows them to have more control over their schedules, you know, enough rest, enough personal time, and also it encourages professionalism, and, you know, hopefully they can be treated with, it's crazy to say, but just with respect and dignity. They also have the opportunity to work in multiple homes, reducing isolation and making it easier for them to seek help or report abuse if needed. There is hope that this model will be more common in the future, offering a safer and more balanced and sustainable working environment for domestic workers. A very sad part of my research into this case was discovering that while looking at the related articles, many others were similar stories of domestic worker abuse. Violence against migrant domestic workers is so heartbreaking. These women leave their homes and families behind to work hard and support others, yet far too many face abuse instead of kindness and respect that they deserve. Each act of violence leaves deep emotional scars, and you know, this all just highlights how much more needs to be done to protect them. It also reminds us of the urgent need for stronger laws and better support system. If you notice any of your neighbors, friends, or family members, helpers, suffering or facing mistreatment, it is important to speak up and support them. There are many organizations and hotlines in Singapore that can provide assistance and help ensure their safety and well-being. I will try to add them in the summary if I can, but just some of them are the MDW Helpline, the CDE, which is Center for Domestic Employees, the HOME, which is Humanitarian Organization for Migrant Economics, and lastly, FAST, which is the Foreign Domestic Worker Association for Social Support and Training. I'll try to add the numbers in if I can, but during my research, I came across a few articles mentioning that this case could be an example of the bystander effect because the tenants or neighbors didn't report anything. But when interviewed, they shared that they had no clue and never heard any suspicious sounds at all. So, what do you guys think about Gayathri's sentence being reduced? I honestly can't imagine the kind of evil it takes to hurt someone to this extent. And even if Gayathri was quote-unquote sick, Why did her mom, Prema, and her husband, Kevin, join in on the abuse? It's just horrifying to think about that we live among such evil and this could be our neighbors or our friends or our families. I can't imagine the fear, loneliness, and sadness Pyeong must have endured during her time here. I hope she rests in peace, and I hope that her family are finding the strength and healing that they deserve. But that's it for today's case, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Please be kind to each other and stay safe out there, y'all. Bye.